Hello, everybody, and welcome to our seventh class on the topic of Avas Chinam. Okay, so we're going to get straight to it. And I know that last week we spoke about the Tisha B'Av idea, and we spoke about when we see flaws in somebody and how we kind of look away and look at ourselves instead as a way of having more Avas Chinam. Okay, I'd like to mention an idea that I started mentioning a few weeks ago about how savlanut, patience, and sovlanut, tolerance, have the same source, which is the word sevel, endurance, the ability to endure something that you don't like so much. And I hope I did not mention this, that the Altar of Kelm is a very interesting definition. If I did mention it, then I'm sorry for the repeat. The Altar of Kelm says something very, very interesting about intolerant people or impatient people. And he says that it's as if they are dishonest, as if there's something wrong with their honesty. Now, to us, like, what's the common factor between honesty and patience? Patient people are very often honest people. Why does it seem like an impatient person would be a dishonest person? It doesn't seem to make sense. And then, so when we look into what the Altar of Kelm is trying to say, we see something very interesting. And he brings a mashal. He says, if you have a store, if you have a store, and somebody comes into the store and picks up an item and says to you, how much does this item cost? And let's say the item is a pen which costs $1. And so you, the store owner, say to this person, that pen costs $1. So the person takes out a $10 bill, and they hand it to you, the store owner, and they say, thank you very much, and they walk out. And you're thinking, they just paid $10 for a $1 item. Why would they want to do this? And you start wondering, like, you kind of look at the money, and you're saying to yourself, maybe this money is counterfeit. Maybe there's something funny here. And you're kind of wondering if you were just dealing with an honest person, because most people don't like to pay $10 for a $1 item, especially if it's a Jewish woman who never likes to overpay. So he says that's kind of what impatience or intolerance is. He says that impatience is really, it's like overpaying for an uncomfortable experience. Let's say there's two people who are sitting in a room and the room is very hot. So one person says, oh, it's hot in here. And then he distracts himself and he starts talking to his friend and he gets busy. And even though it's still hot, he's not kind of, you know, he's distracted himself from the fact that it's hot. The second person, every 5 seconds, is saying, oh, it's so hot. I can't stand it. It's so hot. It's so hot in here. It's so hot in here. It's so hot in here. So both people have been sitting in the same room. But one person keeps on reprocessing the fact that he's uncomfortable, and on that level, he's overpaying for the experience, meaning instead of just feeling this once, he's feeling it over and over and over again. And that's what the Altar of Kelm is trying to teach us, a very creative idea, that impatience is overpaying for the same amount of discomfort, paying for it again and again. So that's really what it's like. Now, therefore, if we take it into the area of Avas Chinam, if I'm interacting with somebody and there's something unpleasant about this interaction, there's something about this person's personality that's not exactly my type or whatever it is, you can be processing that once and afterwards just being able to kind of like get into the conversation and enjoy and give the person a good feeling, or you could be reprocessing again and again and again the thing that's bothering you about this person. And that is a very big obstacle to Avas Chinam, because when your friend, your circle two person, says something annoying or is wearing something that you consider funny or, I don't know, whatever it would be that would possibly annoy you, you kind of process it once and you say, oh, that's kind of funny, why'd you say that, and you move on. With your circle one person, you tend to reprocess that again and again about the thing that they said and how unintelligent it was. And therefore, a lot of what Avas Chinam is going to require is our ability to be magbil our ratzon, to limit the processing. It's kind of the same kind of thing you would do if you thought an inappropriate thought, or if you were thinking about Avodah Zarah or something like that. You would distract yourself from the thought. You wouldn't want to be reprocessing it again and again. And therefore, in order to work on Avas Chinam, when there is something about a person that's bothering us, we have to be able to reprocess, to kind of like stop processing it and not ruminate about the same point again and again. Okay. Now, I could go into this further, but I am afraid that maybe we did talk about this in the past. And I apologize to everybody. Baruch Hashem, my son got married this week on Tuesday, and tonight is Shavuot Brachos, and I'm very, very distracted. So I'm not remembering properly how much we spoke about this idea. So I apologize, and I'm going to go on to something else just in case we did. Okay. What I wanted to say is that we need some methods for dealing with the bothersome idea. We spoke already about the concept of NLP, of kind of moving away from the negative association that I have with this person and trying to reassociate with something positive. But the question always also becomes, what if there's something that really, really bothers me? For example, let's say you're interacting with a person, and the reason why you don't have avas chinam towards them is because something that happened between you and them in the past. Maybe it's because their child and your child are not getting along in school. Or maybe there's something about them which is not so easy for you. Maybe they offended you in a certain kind of a way. Maybe they are taking advantage of you. Maybe there's something. There's something there that's not allowing me to love this person freely. Now, I know that if I turn over to the other side and I look, the person might still be a generous person, a giving person, an intelligent person, a spiritual person, and yet I'm kind of stuck a little bit on the thing that bothers me about them. So last week we spoke about the idea of catching the person exposed, and I'm sorry I saw you that way, and looking away. But I would like to make reference to something that I did on my very, very first series. When we first started this teleconference, I chose the topic of Hakpada, which is about internalized anger. And it was amazing how many people wanted to learn about that topic, because I think that us as Jewish women, we have a lot of internalized anger or grudges that we bear or cheshbonos that we have about people inside our head. And it's interesting that that was a much more popular topic even than anger, because anger gets externalized, and you yell at the person, or anger is usually external. And us as Jewish women, we really try to control it, even though it does happen a lot in our families, in our homes, in privacy, and yet we never feel good about it, and we kind of try to work out a system not to blow up. And therefore, for many people, anger might be more under control than hakpada. Hakpada is internalized anger. And I didn't blow up at you, but inside my heart, I don't have a good feeling towards you. So I might not be nechshel in saying something really offensive or getting angry, and yet avas chinam, it's hard for me to access avas chinam towards you because I am upset. What can I do about the fact that I'm upset? And this is another factor that we have to deal with. So how do we deal with this? And, you know, I said back then in my Hakpada series, which is an 8-part series, and I'm clearly not going to repeat everything I said there today, but I'm going to give you certain main ideas. Hakpada, Rav Yisrael Salant says that certain midos have their proper place. Even anger sometimes is usable in the right way. He said that Hakpada, internalized anger, he turned it around and around and looked for something good about it, and he couldn't find anything good about it. He says that Hakpada, internalized anger, is like Chametz on Pesach. You want to get rid of every little bit of it. And the question then becomes, how can I access Avas Chinam towards you if I do have a feeling of Hakpada? If there's something that upsets me about you, it's not just, it's not for nothing. There's something there. Okay, so let's talk about this a little bit. So in my Hakpada series, I basically said that there are 5 tools for overcoming Hakpada, because it's going to be hard for me to love you freely if I don't It's hard for me to love you freely if I have a grudge, if there's some kind of internalized anger. In fact, it's interesting. Hakpada, the word hakpada, comes from the same shoresh as porcupine. Is in modern Hebrew, it's called a kippod. It's even called a kippod in the Gemara. A kippod is a porcupine, prickly. And a person who has hakpada, who has internalized anger, who's upset, is a prickly person. It's not easy for me to interact with you because I'm kind of prickly. It's not this warm, loving embrace. It's like kind of embracing a porcupine. And, you know, for some of us, hakpada, when I say internalized anger, you might not relate to that. But if I say internalized offense or being very, very sensitive, that's kind of also in the hakpada family because I can't love you freely because I was hurt by you because that comment that you said 3 weeks ago at the Kiddush, I couldn't get it out of my head and I was so hurt and so offended. So it's not always about anger. Sometimes it's a more vulnerable emotion like offense. But us as Jewish women, we tend to have a lot of this. And, you know, sometimes it's people in our inner circle, you know, the circle one people who are not circle two people. You can have this feeling towards a circle two person as well. Sometimes we have it towards a circle three person. You know, somebody one time pushes you or goes ahead of you online or cuts you off on the road and you don't feel good about them. But again, it's the circle one people who are most difficult for us when we have a bad feeling. When there's a certain sister-in-law who said something which was biting and, you know, you felt the tears stinging in your eyes as she said it. Or maybe you didn't react that way, but later on at night you couldn't believe that she said that. It was so embarrassing. These are the things that also get in the way of Avas Chinam. So how do we deal with this? So I'm just going to run through, and I apologize to anybody who was part of my Hakpada series, but it was over 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, so we're going to give a quick review. Okay, so really, we want to remove Hakpada altogether. And when we talk about Sinas Chinam, I asked myself a few times, why did Rabbi Yisrael Salant say that Hakpada is such a bad midah that it has to be removed like Chametz on Pesach? So I think there's a few reasons for this. And one of them is that there's a confusion regarding Hakpada because when you don't react, if you don't sting back at that sister-in-law and you don't say something really biting back and you kind of just smile and you turn away, you feel like $1 million. You feel like, wow, that was such gvura. I can't believe that I didn't answer back. And you know what? It is gvura. I'm not taking away from that part. But if you're left with the fact that you really are planning your lines in your head of what you wish you could have said to her, and you're saying it again and again in your head, and your anger is so built up inside, that's very dangerous. So when we get angry, you know, and we yell at somebody, we say, I didn't like the way I behaved. I need to change that. When we control ourselves and we internalize our anger, sometimes we feel kind of proud. But the problem is that you could be proud about the fact that you didn't blow up. But if you're walking away just very, very, very angry inside, that part has to be dealt with. And that's dangerous. Any situation which is really not good for our spirituality, which makes us feel holy, is not good for us. And maybe that's one of the reasons why Rav Salant says that it's worth working on. But I would like to say something else, that I think that part of this is something different. And this is maybe why Rav Salant says it's like Chametz on Pesach. There is an Isser in the Torah, and since our topic is Avas Chinam, we know that the opposite is Sinas Chinam. And the Torah tells us, Lotisna Esachicha Bilvavecha. Pasuk in Vayikra Yotet. Lotisna Esachicha Bilvavecha. You're not allowed to hate your brother in your heart. And you might be thinking, hate? Who hates? I don't hate. But the Mishnah in Sanhedrin Perek Vav defines Sina. Kol Shelo Diber Ito Gimel Yamim Mitoch Eva. Nikrasone. If you avoid somebody for 3 days out of animosity, you're called a sone. Now, the Mishnah is medayik. It says mitoch eva. If you're avoiding this person because you're embarrassed, that's not called sinah. Even if you're avoiding the person because you want to get over this and you want to love them more, and you know that if you just have a little space from them, you'll be able to restore your avas chinam, that's beautiful. Sometimes we need a little bit of space in order to love the person better. But the Mishnah is telling you, kol shelo diberto gimel yamim mitoch eva, meaning my anger towards you is what makes me want to distance myself from you. And the litmus test is that the distance is making things worse, because I am fighting this battle with you in my head, and as time goes on, I dislike you more and more. And I'm probably adding more insult than you even meant in the first place. So this is a very important litmus test. When you avoid somebody, are you avoiding them because your goal is to love them more and you think that you could love them better from a distance, so the distance is for a good reason? Or is it that you're avoiding them because you want to perpetuate the negative feeling, and there's like a cold war between you, and that's never going to lead to avas chinam. It only gets worse with time. And that's the question. So because the Mishnah in Sanhedrin tells us that hakpada, being offended by somebody or being upset at somebody, could really turn into an iser d'oraisa, lo tisna sechicha bilvavecha. Because if you're avoiding their calls for 3 days, and by the way, a lot of the commentaries who work on the halachas of lo tisna sechicha bilvavecha say that 3 days is like three intervals. Meaning if you usually call this person on Erev Shabbos to say good Shabbos, and for 3 weeks you avoid calling them, so then that would be called Gimel Yamim. It's three situations where you normally would interact with them, where you don't pick up their calls or whatever that would be. That's already on the road to an Issa Dereisa called Sina. And maybe that's why Yisrael Salon compares it to Chametz and Pesach, because we know Bal Yira, Bal Yimatzeh, we're trying to stay away from an Avera Dereisa when we clean our house for Pesach and take out the Chametz. So with Hakpada, we're trying to stay away from the Avera D'oraisa of Lutisna Sechicha Bilvavecha. So Avas Chinam is going to be very, very important, and we're going to have to make sure that somehow we manage to dissipate the negativity that we have inside. And many of us are much sweeter outside than we are inside. Outside, I can walk by you, I can say good Shabbos, I can smile, but inside, I'm really upset. And this doesn't allow the Avas Chinam to flow. So what are we going to do about this? That becomes the question. And one option in the five tools in the toolbox that I gave in my Hakpada series, one option is what I call the externalized form of resolution. And that is vitor. Vitor, meaning I need to consciously decide to let it roll off my back. When I didn't yell at you and I just walked away and I smiled, I was upset, but pretty soon I'm going to be smiling inside also, because it's just not worth it. I'm going to work this out, and I'm going to feel good inside my heart. I'll feel very clean. I mention this as option number one, because vitor is such an important skill to have in our toolbox, and yet in some situations we're going to try and it's not going to work. So it's our first method. And vitor is really about being able to look away and being able to rise above your error. Meaning, you really offended me, you didn't handle the situation properly, and I could have fought back, but I didn't, and I'm deciding to just forgive you, okay? You know, you didn't handle the situation well, or you weren't so tactful, but I'm just going to be bigger than the situation. I'm going to rise above your error. And sometimes it's possible. Sometimes when we want to do this, we are almost surprised to see how successful we can be. And I really feel it's one of those things, like the Maseilas Yesharim says, "Chilasa avoda v'sofo gemul." In the beginning, it's hard work, but very often it pays off later. There's a certain siyata d'shmaya that we're not as upset as we thought we were going to be, and we're able to move on sometimes. I would like to quote. I mentioned this in my Teshuva series. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Zayin. The Gemara talks about the fact that this ability to rise above somebody else's error is also a very, very powerful protecting factor for Yom HaDin. Elul is around the corner, as we're mid-Av right now. And the Gemara tells you, Kol amavir al midosav, ma'avirin lo al kol psha'av. Anybody who we loosely translate as being anybody who can kind of be mevater, can look away from somebody's mistake, Hashem looks away from our mistakes. You rise above somebody else's error, Hashem rises above yours, and He kind of treats us the way we treat others. So if we're very din-like, if we're always, you know, upset and counting, and, you know, then that's the way Hashem is towards us. if we can kind of look away and say, okay, not such a big deal, I love them anyway, Hashem can also overlook our averus. I always like when I teach this idea to mention the Rashi on the Gemara, because the words kol ha-mavir al midosa that the Gemara Rosh Hashanah says, does not make sense grammatically. Mavir al midosav. You pass over your midah. Your midah. It's like, which midah are you passing over? And then we say, mavir al kol pshav. Hashem passes over your averos. That part makes sense. But mavir al midosav, the use of the word midah doesn't seem to be correct here. And Rashi points us out to us in that Gemara that the midah is not the midah we use the word midos, like a midos vad. Midah also means a measuring stick. Amat HaMidah is a measuring stick. So let's play that back again. Kol HaMavir Al Midosav. Anybody who steps over, who passes over his measuring stick. Mavir Lo Kol Pshav. Hashem passes over your averos. And Rashi explains to us, what does this mean to pass over a measuring stick? So Rashi says, so beautifully, Eino Midakdek Limdod Midah Limitza'arinoto. He doesn't measure how much pain other people are causing him. Umavir midotav veholechlo. I'm sorry. Umaniach midotav veholechlo. He puts down the measuring stick and he walks away. And when I dealt with this in my Tshuva series, I said, like, this is like a whole exercise. It's so visual also. You can put down your measuring stick and walk away. Now, what is this measuring stick all about? When your sister-in-law said that biting comment and you were so upset by it, sometimes what you're thinking is like, I've never spoken to her disrespectfully. I would never offend her in public. In fact, there were situations where I could have and I didn't. You're measuring your behavior and you're measuring her behavior, and hers just doesn't add up to yours. Why did they ignore my simcha? I go to all of their simchas. Again, you're measuring your behavior against their behavior. Why is she using those words, those not nice words? I never use that kind of language. Again, I'm measuring my behavior to yours. Why doesn't she ever call me back when I call her? Why does she forget my birthday? I always remember hers. These are things that cause us to have internalized hurt and anger, and yet there's a measuring stick. I'm measuring my behavior. I'm the caller. I'm the birthday person. I'm the one who's always tactful. And you're not. So you're not measuring up to me. And Rashi says to you that if you want the special source for Yom HaDin, you want to be Mavir Al Midosav. You want to be Eino Midakdek Limdod Midalim Etzarinato. Don't take out your measuring stick every time somebody does something to you. Umeiniach Midosav V'Holechlo. But put down the measuring stick and walk away. Okay, so I'm a better caller than her. Or maybe I just happen to have more tact. Or maybe whatever it would be. But that's a big deal, okay? So she's not perfect. And this is a big schos for Yom HaDin. I would like to say that this is our first way of attaining avas chinam towards somebody who's upset you. You have to be able to be forgiving. You have to be able to go down the rachamim track and the ava track and, okay, that wasn't so nice what she just did, but you know what? I could love her anyway. And there's something so powerful, putting down the measuring stick and walking away. And this becomes a whole way of thinking about avas chinam, meaning you're worth it. You're a Jew. You're somebody who I want to love, and you're not perfect. But it's okay. I can rise above that, because I'm sure I have my mistakes that I make too. And I'm not going to get this thing that you did. I'm not going to let that be in the way of my loving you. Now, Vitor is very powerful. It's a big, big plus for us if we're able to do it. It also kind of is healthy for us because we can kind of remove some of our stuff. And back to what the Altar of Kelm said, you don't have to reprocess again and again, why'd you say that to me? But how could she use those words? But that was so embarrassing. But why'd you say it? Because you're reprocessing and you're just perpetuating. And the ability to put down the measuring stick and walk away and not obsess and distract yourself and try to be loving anyway is a tremendous thing for your spiritual health and for your emotional health. And yet, why is this only the first of the five tools? Because sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes whatever it was that happened was very painful and hurtful. And as much as I'm trying not to measure and not to compare, the etzem thing that you did, forget about whether I would never do that to you or not. It's just that what you did was very, very painful for me. Another reason why sometimes we can't use Bitur is because sometimes the person is a constant offender. Dropping the measuring stick and walking away works best with the one-time offenders who you don't have a history with. If you're standing on line somewhere and somebody comes and cuts you and you really were upset at them, but then instead of reprocessing, getting angry, you said, okay, like, you know, I made a mistake, it's okay. It's a Jew, I love Jews anyway. So those are easiest because you don't have to interact with this person again and you've never met them before. But sometimes being mevater with our loved ones is the hardest because there's a history and there are patterns. And sometimes the person's a constant offender. So I'm going to have to drop this measuring stick many, 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 many times about the same offense. And if that's the case, sometimes vitur doesn't work. Sometimes it might not even be the right thing to do. I'll give you another example of where it's not the right thing to do. Would be if the person is an offender in a way that if they understood that they were hurting you, they would not want to be in that position, they would change their behavior, then your vitur in a funny way is like, you know, you're not letting them learn how to make you happy. So you're going to sweat and make yourself forgive this person. But it's like a lifnei iver. It's almost like you're putting a stumbling block in front of this person. They don't even realize that you don't like this behavior. And if you would explain it to them, maybe they would be able to change. So it's like you're not enabling them to do the right thing. And sometimes maybe you're able to be mevater, but if this person keeps doing this behavior, there are other people who they're going to hurt very, very much. And all these are reasons why we would not use vitur. Where we move on to second skill, which is called tochacha. And right, as the pasuk says, latisna techecha bilvavecha, the Torah in Vayikra Yutes goes on to say, hochach tochiach et amitecha, lo tisa lavcheit. You should surely rebuke your brother, your friend. Now, I remember in my series, I think we spoke about tochacha and the skills for tochacha for a long time, maybe two out of the eight classes spoke about this. So here I'm just going to give a synopsis. And I'm going to say that sometimes the external resolution, if vitur is an internal resolution, then tochacha is an external resolution. Rebuke, meaning it has to be that unpleasant conversation, which doesn't have to be so unpleasant, where I just tell you and I explain to you in a nice way about what about your behavior offended me. And I'm doing this in order to repair. This is not about letting off steam. This is about repairing. And it's because I care about the relationship with you. That's why I'm bringing it up. And a lot of Mepharshim talk about that. This pasuk, Ochech Tochiach Et Amitecha, we all know that it's a mitzvah, which often we cannot be mekayim properly. The Rambam says if the person's not going to accept it well, then don't do it. And often if the person doesn't accept it well, it's because the person's very defensive. And many, many people today are defensive, and they can't hear what they did wrong. And yet there's a piece of this where if I come into this with a very, very, very good, healthy approach, I might be able to get you to understand what the problem has been. And, you know, I spoke then a lot about communication skills, to open up with a compliment and to end with a compliment, and a thin slice of the rebuke is like the sandwich method. The rebuke is not said in an extreme way. It's not exaggerating. It's just explaining the way I perceive something, not accusing. Very short, very time-limited. And really, my purpose is I care too much about you to let this thing get in the way. And this, therefore, tochacha becomes a key to avas chinam. And the Kli Yakar actually says this. He says, you know, in generations when Jews love each other, they can give tochacha freely. It's dafka when Jews don't mind having animosity towards each other, that's when they don't even bother. So tochacha has to be used very, very carefully, very sparsely. You're not going to start writing people notes every single day, five times a day, about what they're doing wrong. And yet when you have something that somebody did that's getting in the way of your avas chinam towards them, and you've tried the vitur and it's not working, tochacha is another option. That's option number two. And the goal would be, Uri Weissblum talks about this very, very beautifully, the goal is that the person should thank you for the conversation at the end because you helped them understand and you showed that you cared, and you're coming from such a clean place that's being received in a very clean way. Now, clearly, tohacha is not always going to work. The Rambam says that if a person is very simple-minded, don't use this method. If the person is very confused and he's not going to understand what you're saying right now, don't use it on him. If the person is going to rebel and be very angry, don't do it. So there are many, many situations where we're not going to use tohacha. But I think that some of us are so afraid of confrontation that we have a lot of inner anger that's stopping our avas chinam because we're not willing to talk something out with somebody. And how many times, I'm sure, ladies, you know this, how many times do we feel so much better about somebody after we've had a conversation with them? It's like a relief. And sometimes we're afraid of this and we don't like confrontation, but then we end up really blocking our avas chinam because we're afraid of confrontation. So if you enter a situation and you carefully bring something up because you want to love the person more, you might have better results than you think. Okay, let's move on. Tool number three is what Revolva calls humor. And humor is not the kind of humor that we think about, ha-ha. Humor is its own topic, which I think I spent at least a full hour on then, and we're not going to spend so much time on it now. But Revolva says a humor is the ability to understand where somebody's coming from and still be loving towards them. And that's very intense. That's not so easy. Meaning, really the humor, basically what we're trying to say is it's the ability to look at the person's behavior or the thing that's bothering you about them and to understand it almost as like a psychological observation. Like, oh, they're this way because they're very competitive and I must be a threat to them. Or this person means well, but they just grew up without a lot of tact. Or this person is so insecure in this situation that they're not in control of what comes out of their mouth. Or she so feels like the unloved daughter-in-law that she kind of needs to put me down because, you know, she's hoping to maybe find favor in her mother-in-law's eye, in her mother's eye, whatever, you can imagine. The idea is that it's not all about me, and this person isn't just trying to hurt me. And if I'd understand a little bit more about them and their world and their emotional and psychological context, I might really understand why they're doing this. But Revolva goes on to say so beautifully, "Pikut v'ahava kruchot ze bazeh." It's intelligence and love combined together. Because sometimes we have psychological observations. She's completely insecure. She must be depressed. She's bipolar, whatever it is that we're saying. But we say it in a kind of disparaging way, and we're not loving towards the person. So Revolva says that humor, and maybe at some other point we'll discuss why this is humor. Humor is the ability to understand where somebody's coming from, but not to devalue them and to love them anyway. And this is something which is really, really difficult because there are many people who are insightful and they understand people, but they don't love them freely. And then we have the people who just are loving, but they don't really understand people. And this is intelligence and love combined together. The ability to really, really understand people's weaknesses, where they're coming from, but not to devalue them. And the reason, just, you know, I'll give you in two sentences why I think Revolva calls this humor. And what does it have to do with our humor? Ha-ha, it's not very funny. Is that both of them are situations where you're observing something from the audience's seats, let's say, and you can smile at something that you otherwise would have cried about. You know, when we see a lot of Jewish humor is really, a lot of Jewish humor depicts things that are very sad, but because when I go through it, I'd be very, very sad. But then when I'm sitting in a chair and, like, watching a skit about it, I'm laughing. And that there's something about humor that it's the ability to see a situation from a different angle and to be lighter about it. When I'm in it, I'm quite heavy and intense about it. But when I later observe it from the audience, see, that could actually be lighter. And that's what humor is also vis-a-vis avas chinam. When I'm heavily involved in the thing that's bothering me about you, it's getting in my way. And yet when I kind of observe it from the side and I walk out of the situation and I say, oh, that's why she's doing this, because she's going through a hard time because this and this, but you know what, I love her anyway, or I want to love her anyway, then I have room to lighten up about the thing that's bothering me and to try to be more loving. Okay, that's number three. The last two are tefillah and emunah. Emunah is really, and I think we've said this before in my bitachon vod, and we definitely have said this, emunah bitachon is basically saying that there's nothing, there's no person who kind of crossed paths with me who isn't supposed to be in my life. And therefore, even if I'm not having an easy time with them, there's a reason why Hashem put them in my path. And I always say you can have the lowercase h, why is he doing this to me, which makes you angry. Why is he doing this to me? Then if you capitalize the H and you look up to Hashem, why is he doing this to me? It's more speculative. Why did Hashem put this person in my path? What does he want from me? And I think in the context of bitachon, the ability to be more loving, to give free love to people who are not easy to love, is one of the reasons why Hashem puts these people in our path in the first place. Because he wants us to grow, and he wants us to be bigger people, and he wants us to be like him, who loves all kinds of people who are not doing his will. And it gets us closer to Hashem when we can actually overcome the obstacles of the people who we don't have such an easy time with. So when I deal with such a person, I say, why did Hashem put this person in my path? There might be a lot of reasons for me to be more patient, for, I don't know, all kinds of things. But one of the answers is Avas Chinam. Wow. Here I could really grow in Avas Chinam with this person because it's not easy to love them naturally and freely. And that becomes the goal. Okay. The last point that I'd like to make for today is tefillah. And tefillah is about really davening to Hashem to remove the thing that's bothering me about this person. And I don't know if I said this in any context here. I definitely said this in the Hakpada series, that, you know, we daven to Hashem for so many things. We ask him to do very big things, to bring Refuah Shleima, to bring the Geula, to change world politics, to eradicate poverty. We ask Hashem for a lot of big things. Why can't I ask Hashem to help me remove this obstacle that's not letting me love you freely? I mean, he can do so much more. He can clearly do that. And this becomes the tefillah idea, that I turn to Hashem and I say, Hashem, I really want to be able to love this person freely. I want to have Avas Chinam. There's something about them or something that they've done to me that's on my radar screen. And can you help me bleep it off the screen so that I could love this person more freely? I think many of us have people in our lives today who we do love freely, who maybe 40 years ago, we had some taina with them, and it wasn't so easy to love them freely. But somehow, whatever that story was, that history was, Hashem makes it kind of bleep off our radar screen, little by little by little. That's why things that were bothering you tremendously 10 years ago, often you don't even remember them now. And it's a process, a very slow process. I used to think about that 100 times a day. And then suddenly, without my knowing, it was 95, and then it was 92, and then it was 90. And over the long process, I got back down to the fact that I barely think about this. In fact, I don't even remember so clearly what happened. But that's a long, tedious process. When we want to be more loving towards people, we have to ask Hashem to make that process go quicker. Hashem, can you please help bleep this, whatever is bothering me, can you please help bleep it off my screen much quicker? And you know what? Sometimes we do get this gift and we don't even realize, but if something was bothering you tremendously, you're very hurt by something, and all of a sudden something new comes into your life, you're involved in a project or you met a new friend, and you're very distracted by this new thing and you have this good energy and kind of like, oh, that helped me. I find that, you know, when girls and boys have bad breakups in a relationship where somebody was very hurt, you have the people who agonize and suffer for a very long time. And then you have the people that Hashem does the chesed with them, that either he puts a new relationship in their life quickly, or he gives them some source of something that grabs them and pulls at their heartstrings and helps them move past and get past the pain. So this really is what we're diving for. And this is like kind of like you're laughing for a nice nister. Why is it that certain people process things quickly and certain people suffer for a long time? We don't really know. So when I ask Hashem to help me kind of bleep this off my screen quicker so that I could love you, it's like an ace nister. It's a hidden ace. We're not going to ever really know why and how I suddenly wasn't bothered by you anymore like I used to be bothered by you. And this becomes the focus in our tefillah. I have to share with you, ladies, that a few times in my life I davened for the Siyata Dishmaya about things that were really bothering me. And sometimes I felt that it was almost miraculous. Sometimes it was an internal process that just, you know, I got distracted and it was easy to move on. And sometimes it was even something that seemed like a gift from Hashem, like suddenly this person wasn't in my path so much anymore and it was easy for me to deal with them, or suddenly whatever that behavior was that they were doing that was really bothering me, something's changed in that circumstance and the person stopped doing it. And we really are zocha to see Hashem. You know, when you want to do the right thing, when you want to be pure, you're saying, Hashem, you know, you're not asking for $1 million. You're saying, Hashem, I want to have a pure heart. I want to love fellow Jews. I think Hashem is likely to respond to that when you really mean it. I always like to say there's a psychological piece in that as well, which is that you're ready to part from the... You're not gaining any more side bonus but from your anger and from your not loving the person. Sometimes we want to hold on to the grudge because, you know, we have our reasons. When you're davening to Hashem, please remove this grudge so I can love this person freely. You're... in a sense, showing that you're ready to part, both on a spiritual level and on a psychological level. I'm ready. I wish I didn't have this negative feeling. I just want to love this person. There's no secondary benefits from being in a negative place towards this person. And when we do this, we kind of feel pure. And we could be zocha to siyata d'shmaya to really be able to have avasinim that we need. Okay, so I'm going to end here for today. And our homework is going to be to look to see if there's anybody who I don't have avas chinam towards them because I do have some kind of internalized grudge, something that's bothering me, that's blocking. And to try to run through the five skills that we discussed today. Number one is vitor, kind of rising above the person's error. Number two is tochacha, communicating with them about the issue in a loving way in order to repair. Number three is humor, understanding their situation and why they're acting the way they're acting, where it fits into them and their background and their life and what's going on with them, being able to love them anyway. Number four is emunah bitachon. Why did Hashem send this person to me? Hashem, it's not coincidental that they're in my life. And number five is tefillah, davening to be able to remove the negativity so that I could love this person better. So we're looking to see if there are any of these five tools will work with us. If you have your level one person who you're trying to make them into a level two, and there's something, you know, you bear a certain grudge towards them, to try to use the five tools and see which one. Sometimes, you know, sometimes not just one, sometimes two of them work together. You can do the vitor and the humor. You could do the tochacha and the tefillah. And to see if it helps you, with the ultimate goal being the ability to love this person freely and to remove an obstacle to avas chinam. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. I'll be happy to take questions.